afternoon and welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located down at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can reach us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to help you out with any of your firearms-related issues, whether it be firearm selection, taking a training class, questions about concealed carry. Whatever your concern might be, we certainly would be more than glad to help you out. If you'd like to get on the show today, I want to encourage our listeners to call us at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you on the air and give you a chance to voice your opinion about anything that may have been newsworthy over the past week. Which, speaking of noteworthy incidents or newsworthy incidents, I just want to mention a couple that occurred this past weekend that kind of touch on a couple of different themes that have run consistent throughout the time we've been on the air for the last few years. And the first one had to do with an active shooter situation in North Carolina, where an apparently disgruntled ex-employee went back into a lumber yard where he worked carrying a shotgun, and he specifically picked out multiple suspects. He killed three of the four people that he sought, and then he left the facility, went home, and apparently shot himself. However, he did not die. The police responded to the initial scene. The subject was already gone, as is typically the case, either left the scene and or killed himself in other situations around the country. And then once they got information as to who it was, they went to his home, and the police officers cautiously approached, attempted to make contact. When there was no answer at the door, they looked in and saw him unconscious in the living room, and then they forced entry and went inside and found that he had a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. However, he is still alive, I believe, in critical condition. Interesting thing there again, a situation where the police were kind of helpless to do anything to intervene. They had no idea the incident was going to go down. Apparently the people at the lumberyard, given the mentality of a lot of people out there, didn't have a security blanket in place. Individuals were not armed, likely didn't have security on premises, and another terrible situation goes down where people basically helpless in their workplaces. Continues to happen on pretty much a weekly basis. Again, we advocate concealed carry in the workplace. We need to have people who are on the scene, ready, capable, and willing to take action when situations like this happen.
And trained as well. I mean, being able to have a plan, know exactly what you're going to do. Each person has a role. All of that stuff thought out in advance, so that because under the stress of a violent encounter, you're not going to have time to think.
I know there are a number of people out there who are, believe it or not, right now they're more concerned with the mental state of the individual who did this than they are with the victims or the circumstances surrounding this incident, and I find that terribly unfortunate. Because quite frankly, I'm not too worried about his mental state, given the situation as it was reported and likely to have unfolded. The bottom line is he chose to take innocent life. And regardless of what his mental state was or his reasoning, there was no justification, and those people had a right to defend themselves. And I think that should be the issue that's first and foremost in the minds of the people who are looking at this situation after the fact. Certainly, we've talked about this many times, and a couple weeks ago we talked about the state of Ohio trying to do a better job, or maybe even the federal government doing a better job tracking mental illness and things of that nature, so they can try to lead interference and intercept some of these individuals before they get a chance to get firearms. But the bottom line is the more ready response or the more reasonable response is for people to be armed and ready to defend themselves or others from predators. And we keep saying it, and incidents continue to occur, and they're going to continue to occur for a long time. We just have to hope bring these incidents to a level of conscious awareness to the people that that are concerned, and that should be any citizen, because you notice when we talk about these incidents, they happen all over the country. There's no particular area that's more prone to these types of violence than others, all the way from Spokane, Washington, to Miami, Florida, to New York City, to the heartland of America in Missouri, and all across the country. And violence just doesn't pick specific locations. It just erupts spontaneously, and we have to have people ready, willing, capable, who've thought it through, who are going to be able to intervene. And the situations that have been minimized have, in fact, been minimized by those who have taken initial action right there on the spot. The second incident I wanted to just kind of put out there, and I'll talk a little bit about it now, and then I want to encourage our callers, if they heard about it, to call in at 457-1290 and tell us your opinion about it. But it was an 82-year-old man in Florida who was home early hours of the day. I believe it was 6 a.m. when he heard some very loud and violent knocking at the door of his house. He obviously, being living there by himself and being in a neighborhood where the article later goes on, they've had numerous problems. He went and he took up his gun and started walking around the house, trying to follow the guy around, apparently going from entrance to entrance, pounding on the doors. And at some point, he felt threatened for his life, and he used deadly force and shot the intruder, who died in the driveway outside the residence. And at the time, he had a ski mask and a hammer and gloves on him, and there's no doubt that he was going to commit a criminal act. He had just recently been released from prison and had crimes, previous criminal history involving prowling, burglary, probation violations, theft, and criminal traffic violations in his past. And there's no question, according to the law enforcement officers, that was his intention, to prey on innocent people. One of the things that was brought up in this article is one of the trends down there is to break in the homes of elderly individuals to steal their prescription medications. I thought it was interesting to note that the police chief in this incident made a quote to the news media. He told the television news crew at the scene, quote, "The senior did something that law enforcement hasn't been able to do, put the suspected burglar out of business," unquote. And I thought that was an interesting and rather straightforward quotation, but true nonetheless.
It's pretty direct.
Yeah. So obviously he'd thought about that, and the previous incidents that occurred in that community provoked him to take a stance and to defend himself, realizing that a phone call to the local police department may not, in some cases, be the appropriate response. And several of the other residents in the area talked about the ongoing crime problem, and they mentioned that they said everything from he did a good thing to they couldn't believe that crime in their area is increasing the way it is, but it's time that citizens do something about it. And that's, again, an issue that's running across the nation, and I think it's important for all of us to kind of digest that and think about it. But if you happen to read about that incident, you have some opinion one way or another about people using firearms in defense of themselves or others, please give us a call, because I know it's something that even people who were maybe before things became more public than they are these days, they were anti-gun or thought nobody should have a gun. They're starting to take up arms. They're hiring armed security personnel for their own protection, and they realize that a call to 911 isn't necessarily your safety blanket, and they have to take the matters in their own hands in some cases to defend themselves or to defend other innocent people.
Well, I think one of the comments that's also relevant about that is that people said they can't believe that it's gotten this bad, and denial is one of the first problems for why people go unprotected. They don't want to believe that it could be this bad, that there are people out there who are willing to do whatever they choose in order to get what they want from you. And until you are willing to get your brain around the fact that there are people out there who are willing to do evil things to get what they want, you are not going to be fully prepared to do what it takes to defend you against those people.
Now, I was watching, another thing. When I mentioned earlier about, crime doesn't pick its location to rear its ugly head, just before coming in, the previous hour, I was just sitting around surfing through the channels on the television, and I just caught bits and pieces of an incident. One of those shows where they talk about infamous crimes, and there was a pretty infamous murder on Nantucket Island, which is a very posh, upscale community, and they say that very, very low crime, certainly very low, if not almost absent violent crime. There was a murder of a very prominent citizen in that community, and the initial investigation was like it had to be somebody from the outside, and who would come here and do something like this. And you think about the targets in a location like that. You had a bunch of rich people who live in very rich homes. They have lots of property, and it doesn't take much to get out to the island. You don't have to pass a background check to ride the ferry out to Nantucket Island, apparently, is one of the issues that came up in the subsequent investigation. Anybody could have come from the mainland and done that. But the point I want to make here is that there's a community where it's pretty much a resort community, lots of good things going on, but something very tragic happened there. And no matter where you're at, you have to have the capability to defend yourself.
Jeff, let's go out to the phone and talk to Brian in Vandalia, who's calling. And Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I had a question since you were talking about the workplace shootings.
Mm-hmm.
I have a concealed carry permit, and my office happens to be a privately owned company, but it is on City of Dayton property. The parking lot is City of Dayton property. So what are the legalities of keeping my weapon in a locked box in the vehicle, and can the employer take any action against employees in a situation like that?
That's an interesting question, because it is not the employer's property that you're parking on. So they could, you could certainly make the argument that that you are not violating any of the employer's policies, since you're not on company property with your firearm. Does the employer prohibit firearms in the workplace or on company property?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But if you're not on company property, then that would not be applicable. And from what I can see, you still obviously run the risk of saying, the employer could fire you. That would be their recourse. They wouldn't be able to have you arrested or charged with anything, because you're not doing anything illegal.
Right. Well, and this brings up another issue that we kind of talked about earlier, but I want to address it straight on point. Is I don't know the facts and circumstances surrounding the policies in place at the lumber facility down in North Carolina, but let's assume for sake of argument that they had a policy in place like you do, restricting firearms in or on the premises. It would have done no good at all to stop this particular act, because people who are bent on committing violent criminal acts don't pay attention to the law. And I just wish we could get the people who make decisions to institute such policies to understand that the bad guys, or the mentally deranged people, or regardless of what you want to call them, the people who want to commit predatory violent criminal acts on other people are not going to pay attention to signs posted on windows, policies written in manuals, security personnel sitting at front desks. They're simply not going to do it. The only way you're going to stop them is if you have equal or greater force, and you're willing to use that equal or greater force. And it's very unfortunate. Near our location, I won't mention the business, we have several individuals who come to the range, and they have to park on our property and keep their firearm locked in their car, parked on our property, in order to come after work to shoot, because their employer not only prohibits it by policy from having firearms, but they've taken the steps to tell these people individually. They know their members, and if they find out, they're going to fire them on the spot. I think that's wrong. That's unfortunate. And it's just a mentality that is counterproductive, because as we've said time and time again, and your call kind of leads us into it and just gave me a chance to mention it again, is that the bad guys aren't going to pay attention to the law, and they're not going to refrain from doing their deadly deeds just because firearms are prohibited on premises.
Brian, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our first break for the hour.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We'd like to give you a little bit of an update of something that's going on next month. On Saturday, February 11th, and Sunday, February 12th, there's going to be a conference up in the Crown Plaza Hotel in Dublin, Ohio, just outside of Columbus. And it's the Second Amendment Freedom Conference. Jeff and I actually are going to be one of the speakers Sunday afternoon, and we'll be talking about some practice with a purpose and how you can get better use out of your range time, and some drills and things that you can do to improve your shooting skills. There are going to be several speakers there. Tim Schmidt from United States Concealed Carry Association will be one of the speakers. Linda Walker, who is one of the principals in the Buckeye Firearms Association and is also on the board of directors of the National Rifle Association, will be speaking about ladies of high caliber, and there are several others. You can find the information about that conference at 2afreedom.com, and there's also a link to that on our Facebook page. You can get to our Facebook page by going to our regular show page at sim-trainer.com/radio and click on the Facebook link there in the header of the page, Shooting from the Hip fan page for that. So if you would like more information about those, and also the Buckeye Firearms Buckeye Blast, which will be that Saturday night, now you can get that information there as well.
Another of the keynote speakers there is one of my mentors, Dave Spalding. Dave is a retired law enforcement officer who pretty much changed the way we've we thought about firearms training in the greater Dayton area, and then certainly expanded that to throughout Ohio and all over the country. He's a nationally renowned and respected individual, and if you have a chance to listen to any of his presentations, they're top notch.
One of the speakers is John Benner from Tactical Defense Institute, another friend of Sim Trainer,
and another Ohio based organization stationed out of Southern Ohio,
and they do a great job down there in Adams County.
Yeah. And I just wanted to reiterate that reference to Dave. We utilize Dave's shooting success pyramid in our advanced handgun series. That
stole it fair and square.
Stole it fair and square. And he knows it, and he gets all the credit. And it's good stuff because it talks about the basic issues involved, everything from the base of the pyramid, mastering the fundamentals through concentration, consistency, accuracy, and speed. And you know, when I first saw that, I didn't understand the relevancy. But as I started to listen to his presentation, and now as I utilize it to teach other people, I see the tremendous value in understanding that general
concept. It's a very powerful concept. And it really says that if you work on the fundamentals first, get those right, all that other stuff will follow. You have to focus on the fundamentals and get all those right. You cannot build a solid shooting skill set if you don't have the fundamentals right. You just have to. And it's amazing how many people don't have the fundamentals right and don't realize they don't have the fundamentals right and have difficulty placing an accurate shot either at the range or under stress because they don't realize what they're not doing correct. They think that they are doing everything the way they're supposed to. And just a few minutes on the range, and we can usually see, well, that's not quite what you got to do. And we have some great tricks and techniques that we can use at the range to help people solve some of those shooting problems, diagnose those shooting errors, and help them correct them. And that is, again, the fundamentals of the base of the shooting success pyramid. If you don't get that right, you can't do it.
You know, another event that's going on next week of noteworthy significance to our listeners is the SHOT Show out in Las Vegas, Nevada. The SHOT Show is the shooting industry's annual shooting and outdoor trades big expo show where they introduce a lot of their new products. And we sent one of our staff members out there. He's flying out. Matter of fact, he's probably just getting into Las Vegas. He flew out this afternoon, and he's going to spend the week there visiting with some of the vendors and working out some deals and seeing what's new and what new things are going on. And everything pretty much comes to a standstill this week while all of the manufacturers and vendors and area distributors are at the SHOT Show. That's where they're setting pricing. That's where they're setting kind of standards for the industry. They have meetings, and some of our staff are going to be able to attend various firearms-related seminars that will help drive the business. And 2011 was a great year, and we're looking forward to an even better 2012. And it typically starts with the SHOT Show and some of the fallout from that great event.
Yeah, so if you're waiting for something to come from one of the firearms manufacturers or outdoor sporting goods manufacturers, and it's not already shipped, it's probably not going to get shipped this week.
After the break, I'm going to give you just a short overview of two products that we've had the fortunate opportunity to preview. That's Ruger's SR-22 and the Smith & Wesson M&P 22, both of which are going to be, I'm sure, big sellers and very popular among shooters. And I'll give you a little bit of overview of our preliminary testing evaluation in the limited time we've had those. But they both obviously have some pretty good initial reviews.
And they have good companies behind them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're going to be fun products to do. We're going to have to break here in just a minute or so at the bottom of the hour for the news, but we want to give you another opportunity to get in on the program. So if you would like to be part of the show today, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and we will get you up on the board and find out what it is that you'd like to contribute to the program. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Good afternoon and welcome our listeners back to the show. I want to remind our listeners, if they want to get on the radio today, give us a call, 457-1290. That's 457-1290. We'd be more than glad to take your calls. And Mark, let's go right out the phones. We have a caller on the line.
Let's go talk to David in Northridge, who's calling. David, welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. How can we help you?
I had a question. I was thinking about getting a concealed carry, and I was concerned about or wanted to know about the rules or how does it affect, like interstate travel? If I go on vacation, I'd want to have protection with me. How does that work once you leave the state of Ohio?
Okay. Unfortunately, it is quite a puzzle. It should be as simple as you have a license and you can drive your car, so you have a license and you can take your handgun. But unfortunately, it's not quite that simple. What you really need to do is to lay out your map through where you're planning to go and then look up the laws in each of those locations. There are some places that you can do that. We have some links on our website and at the radio show page because we've talked about this before, but you can go to the NRA Institute for Legislative Action. They have a gun laws link there that gives you summaries of each of the state's laws. You can go to handgunlaw.us, and that will give you some more information and a slightly different perspective. The United States Concealed Carry Association has a great concealed carry reciprocity guide, and there are some guides on other places. The Ohioans for Concealed Carry also has some information, and there's a lot of places that you can look for that stuff. What I do when I'm going to travel, I go to all of those different sites to get a rough picture, and then I go to either the Attorney General or the State Highway Patrol or the State Police website in each of the states that I'm going to travel through. And I look up the actual code in that state and read it and find out just exactly what their law says about concealed carry, transport of firearms, how you transport in a motor vehicle, if there's any differences on that, some places that you can actually have the gun loaded in your vehicle, even if you don't have a license that's reciprocal with that state, because they treat your motor vehicle as though it were an extension of your home and consider that to be part of their castle doctrine. That's different from Ohio, but that's one of the things that it's just different in each of the different states, and unfortunately, you do need to check each of the states you plan to drive through.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Where is it that you want to go?
I'm thinking about traveling like to Florida, or maybe probably within a couple months going to Chicago.
Well, the Chicago, you can't take it with you. It's just that simple. There is no concealed carry. You just simply can't have it with you in Illinois. You can carry it through Illinois if that's not your destination. But if you're going to Chicago, you're just going to have to leave it somewhere else. Chicago has a complete ban on handguns, and although that's been challenged in the Supreme Court and they lost, they haven't really changed their rules and their laws yet. So if you have that with you, you're probably going to run into some of the problems like other people this month have in New York. Yes. And I don't know if you've seen some of those stories, but there have been people who have tried to do what they thought was the right thing to do. And some of them were actually following federal law, but that federal law was ignored by the city of New York. And some of them were not following federal law. They were doing what they thought was right, but it wasn't in accordance with New York's laws, and they've gotten in trouble.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, that's why it's really important for you to do your research before you try to take a firearm across state lines.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
Going to Georgia is a lot easier. Going to Florida is a lot easier. Georgia is the only place that your Ohio license, if you go down 75 all the way down to Florida, there's no place except Georgia that you'd have a problem. And it's possible to get reciprocity with Georgia by getting another license. I have a Pennsylvania license, which was $26. You have to go to Pennsylvania to get that license now. When I did it, you were able to do it over the mail. You can get a license through the mail from Florida, based on the training that you would have for your Ohio license. Obviously, we think that our training is by far the best. I don't care what anybody else says. You know, we might be a little prejudiced on that, but we have a lot of people backing us up on that. So we'd love to have you come take your concealed carry training with Sim Trainer. And if you call and tell the folks at the range when you make your reservation that you were on the show, they'll give you a discount as well.
Oh, cool.
You know, that's an issue, Mark, that just is very unfortunate. We talked about it last week a little bit, but I had a lady call me today, said that she and her husband are going to go spend 2 weeks in Florida, and she just wanted to find out exactly what she can and can't do. And it's just unfortunate that we have to have those issues where people have to get online and start looking to make sure that they're going to be in compliance with laws of the relative states. And the point that the previous caller brings to mind is Chicago, Illinois. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I know as the history of reviewing the FBI's uniform crime reports.
Yeah, they're
one of the most violent
yep.
cities as far as violent crime in the nation, and yet they continue to prohibit individuals from carrying firearms to defend themselves. New York, you mentioned, another one. There was an article in the Concealed Carry magazine about a lady in Redding, California. Now listen to this one, and this just kind of strikes right at the nerve here. She's in her home. She's a 66-year-old widow. She's in her home minding her own business, and a 37-year-old
convicted criminal who got out of jail Thursday night, this is now at sunup Friday morning, breaks in, starts to break into the house. She fires two warning shots, which that's another issue, and we're not going to go into that right now. He still doesn't leave. He goes to another entry point, breaches that entry point, comes in, she shoots him dead. Clean and clear, no big deal, self-defense. She feared for her life and her safety. The last line of the article says that while police and prosecutors will review the shooting, early indications are that the homeowner will not face charges. But that doesn't say will not. It says that she, you know, she will not, but there's no guarantee. Yeah. And there's a state where they have very restrictive gun laws, and here's a person defending her safety in her home, and it shouldn't even be in question. Yeah. It's very unfortunate that we got to live under those circumstances.
Well, the fact that they would even say that they're not willing to make a commitment that they're not going to charge her is just ridiculous. It's absurd. And unfortunately, that's the case in a lot of the country. And the laws vary, as we mentioned, the laws vary from state to state. So if you are going to travel, it's very important that you understand exactly what the laws are, not just in your origin and destination, but in every state that you travel through in between, especially if you're traveling on the road.
There was another incident reported in the United States Concealed Carry Magazine, and this was the most recent issue, the January, it's Volume 9, Issue 1, and I encourage you to subscribe to those magazines, but they talk about a Temple University student who was off campus minding his own business, was robbed. He and his friends were robbed by a 15-year-old who was armed with a gun. A shootout ensued where the 15-year-old started shooting. The innocent victim ended up getting shot in the leg. However, had a concealed carry weapon legally on his possession, ended up returning fire and shooting the suspect. And obviously a positive outcome, was treated at the hospital, and the victim was okay, and the bad guy ended up dying. But the university campus police, when asked to comment, reported on their efforts to boost campus security and reminded news reporters that students are not allowed to have guns on campus. The point I want to make there is this incident could have very easily occurred somewhere on campus as opposed to downtown Philadelphia where it ultimately went down, and yet we continue across the country to not let law-abiding citizens have firearms to defend themselves in different locations, including college campuses.
Well, and in Ohio as well, college campuses are off-limits for carry. Yes, you can have your firearm locked in your vehicle. How many people are assaulted in their vehicle on college campuses? It's usually walking from their vehicle in between classes in some of the dark areas of campus at night. That's where people get assaulted. They are not assaulted in their vehicle very often. And yet, Ohio law prohibits students who are licensed to carry a handgun, which means they have to be at least 21 years old, they are prohibited from carrying on campus. In fact, the faculty is also prohibited from carrying on campus, for the same reason, by that same sweeping law. That really needs to change. We need to get that restriction off. We need to get the restriction from elementary schools taken off. Elementary school students aren't going to be legally carrying a firearm. They're not going to be able to get a license. I don't know of any elementary school students who've made it to 21 years and still in elementary school. I'm not sure they could pass the test anyway.
That brings up another point, Mark, when we talk about these areas where they're basically killing zones. I had an individual who talked about a local Dayton community. They said, well, we're not too concerned about it. She's arguing the point with me because we have school safety officers. Well, I happen to know in that community they have one school safety officer that is typically either at the police department doing administrative duties or at one of the many schools in the jurisdiction on any given day. So the other schools are totally open for the intruder to
nobody armed,
exactly,
nobody able to
there.
Stop a threat.
So the assumption is, oh, we got school safety in our community. Well, what's that mean? In many cases, that means unarmed security guards on premises and or one or two or three police officers responsible for multiple campuses or multiple facilities over the course of a day, in addition to their other days, their days off and everything else. A lot of places uncovered.
Yeah, but the students are armed anyway. Well, yeah. We're talking about downtown Dayton, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a secret. We're not going to tell anybody.
Yeah, there's lots of issues out there, and we just need to – I just wish people would look at the facts instead of relying purely on emotion and uninformed opinion. Quite frankly, it's uninformed opinion and emotion that are guiding a lot of the decisions that they make. If they would just look at the facts, if they took – don't even take the most notorious incidents, whether it be Columbine or Virginia Tech. Take the last 10 incidents where active shooters have occurred, the one I described today in North Carolina, and go backwards, the last 10. Look at the facts surrounding that and say, hey, would a policy or procedure of no guns in those locations have stopped any of them from occurring? I feel pretty confident that not in a single one of those cases would any policy restricting guns from being in the hands of legitimate people willing to defend themselves would have averted any of those criminal acts.
People who are willing to do bad things and use a firearm to do it are not going to be deterred by a sign on the door that says you're not allowed, because they know they're not allowed to commit murder in the first place. That is not a question. They already know that. And if they're going to violate that using a firearm, they're certainly not going to be caring at all about the sign on the door or an employer policy that says you can't have that gun here.
You know, another article, Mark, that I want to encourage people to, well, let me first of all, a magazine, America's Freedom, which is one of the NRA's publications for people who support the NRA, in their January edition, they had a couple of interesting articles. One, a very detailed article about the facts surrounding Fast and Furious. And if you have the opportunity to look at that either in print or online, you're going to be pretty upset when you look at the facts and circumstances surrounding what actually happened there. Even though some of the initial intentions might have been righteous, the way it was carried out, and then more particularly the way things have been covered up. And I think it's clear and unequivocal that things have been covered up over the last several months in the Senate investigation into the circumstances surrounding that. There's a lot of very interesting and unnerving circumstances that occurred there. In that same article, I just wanted to point out that Wayne LaPierre, who
he's the executive vice president,
president of the NRA. He talks about the mayors against illegal rights.
Illegal rights?
Yeah. I'm sorry. The mayors against your rights is what he calls them now, because it's people like Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, and his 250 mayor coalition. So they, you know, they think that's substantial given the tens of thousands of cities in this country. He's leading the charge. Yet in all these big cities, these incidents continue to occur, and there's just no relevancy to the initiative he's trying to force down people's throats.
Well, we've been having fun. Let's let someone else in on the fun. Go out and talk to Chad, who's calling from Bell Fountain. Chad, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just want to know about the concealed weapons permit. If a person has a gun that's out in a holster, like, you know, like the Western days, do they have to have a concealed weapons permit?
If you're carrying openly, where the gun is visible, you don't have to have a license to carry it concealed, except in a motor vehicle. So you can't carry that gun in a motor vehicle when it's loaded. And loaded means either there is ammunition in the gun itself or ammunition in any magazine or speed loader that can be used with that gun. So in your motor vehicle, you're not going to be able to have a gun ready for use. But outside, if you're just walking around, it's possible. And you know, maybe up in Bell Fountain, it's a little bit more rural. People wouldn't be too upset by that. In a lot of places, you're going to have more attention than you really wanted.
Now, one more question is, you know, people that got felonies, is there some type of thing that they can actually, cause, you know, I'm a hunter and I have a felony, but, you know, I love to be able to go hunting, you know, without getting any trouble. You know what I mean? I got private land and everything.
Okay, well, you're going to have to do that either with a muzzle loader or you're going to have to do that with archery equipment. Because you are, if you have a felony that has not been expunged from your record, then you are prohibited from owning, possessing, or carrying a firearm, period, until the law is changed or until, you know, right now, there's no way around that except to have your rights restored and to have the felony expunged.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling the show.
You know, Mark, that brings up an issue. That the issue that we discussed a couple shows ago, I talked to Steve Pearson, who's one of our affiliate attorneys, and he's going to come on the show in a couple weeks.
Great.
And he's going to address that very issue, but he said he wanted some time to research it because there has been some changes in how those things are being handled in the courts. But,
right, and the Restoration of Rights Bill that passed at the end of last – went into effect in September, passed last year, that will also affect that, and we really appreciate him doing the research to help our listeners find out more information about that.
Yeah.
It is kind of a tricky area of the law, and it's one of those things that now that it's changed, we're going to have to figure out, you know, how do we go about that? And I know that some of those procedures haven't even been set yet.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery with Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Trent in Brookville. Trent, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. I'd like to purchase a pistol that's going to be concealed eventually, and I've been convinced to purchase a 40 Smith & Wesson.
Okay.
And so my question is, what size? I know they usually make a small, medium, and large. I know there's correct terms for that, but I'm curious which one would be best for concealing but still accurate.
Well, when you're talking about 40 Smith & Wesson, you're talking about the caliber of the round itself.
That's correct.
And what is it? Let's revisit that for just a second. What is it that drove you to the say that the 40 Smith & Wesson is the right answer?
Just advice from various people.
Okay.
They say it's a little more powerful than a 9mm.
Right.
Obviously not as big as the 45.
Right. And let me just suggest that you go out to the Buckeye Firearms Association website and read the article that says an alternate look at stopping power. Basically, the thought of it, if it doesn't start with a 4, it's not really a gun for personal defense is a myth, and it's wrong. A lot of the police departments are now going back to the 9mm because it is just as effective in terms of being able to deal with the threat, plus you get extra rounds in the same size gun. So it isn't to say that 40 is bad. I carry 40, but it was because somebody convinced me that that was necessary back before I knew what I was doing. And if I had to do it all over again, I probably wouldn't have bought that. But it's perfectly fine caliber, but I wouldn't make the decision on which gun to select based on the caliber itself. Jeff?
I want to just add, I carry a 9 on duty and have my entire career. An additional issue relevant to that argument between 9 and 40 is the ability to handle the recoil and manage the gun. So stopping power is not as relevant as shot placement. And if you hit them where you're supposed to hit them with, regardless of what you hit them with, that's the issue.
Now the other thing is that the larger the gun, the more able you will be to manage the recoil. In other words, a larger, heavier gun will have less felt recoil than a smaller gun. So
right.
If you want a gun that's easy to conceal, but you're going to carry a 40 caliber, which is a pretty hot round and has a fairly significant recoil, you may find that that is just, it's just uncomfortable to shoot, and you're not going to practice with it as much as you should. The other side of that practice question is that 40 caliber ammunition is a little bit more expensive, and so some people are reluctant to use as much of it as they should in order to practice and get competent.
We had an individual come to our basic class, I think, just 2 weeks ago who came with a Glock 40, and after shooting several of our guns at the end of the day, indicated he was going to go trade that in for a Glock 19, which is a 9mm, because he never shot the 40, but he, like you, relied on verbal advice from somebody else. And remember, somebody else's experience isn't the same as yours, and I want to encourage you to shoot the guns before you make the definitive decision, because there's a big difference when it's in your hand, firing it, versus in your hand in the store looking at it.
Now, what if I were to, so let's say I were to purchase a 9mm, what's the largest size that I can purchase that's still concealable?
Oh, a full-size gun is concealable depending on how you want to adjust your clothing or what kind of holster you want to use. You can conceal anything if you're willing to adjust to it, and it's just a question of how flexible are you in your ability to do that. And we cover that in some detail in our concealed carry class, and we also will help very much with selection of the firearm in our basic handgun class, because we take all our guns out into the range and let you try pretty much everything and figure out what really works best for you.
I'm going to come visit y'all. That sounds great.
Hey, thanks very much. We'd love to have you come down.
And right along those lines, we typically put out the most popular guns that we found to be 70, 80, 90% of the people are ultimately looking at anyway, and that's the Glock lines, the Smith & Wesson M&Ps, the Springfield lines, the Ruger lines, and we let them pick between the subcompact, the compact, and the full size. And Mark and I have no problem concealing a full size, whereas somebody else may need a compact.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of what your size, your body type, what curves you have to holster around, and that sort of thing. Trent, thanks very much for calling the show. And let's go out to Michael, who's called from Waynesville. And Michael, welcome to the show.
How you doing today, guys?
We're doing great. How can we help you?
I'd just like to make a comment. Recently, just this past week, I was pulled over in the Kettering area.
Okay.
And, a lot of people are nervous, people that have their concealed carry license, about being pulled over and this, that, and the other, and the proper procedures to go through. And I just wanted to let people know that it was a very pleasant, the situation, explained to the officer, I had, window was down, hands were on the steering wheel, told him that I had my concealed carry license and was carrying.
And he didn't freak out, huh?
No.
No, how about that?
No, it was very pleasant. I mean, and it's no big deal. I mean, I've heard people saying, well, what do you do? What do you do? Act normal.
Yeah.
Follow the procedures.
And the nice thing is you're a law-abiding citizen doing what you're legally allowed to do, and the experience was very favorable, because I'm sure the law enforcement officer understood the situation. Obviously, he's going to approach with caution as he would at all times, but because you're a law-abiding citizen, there wasn't a whole lot of more concern than if it was anybody else.
Like in the situation I was in, I was not in my own vehicle, so therefore he didn't know when he came up, and that's the reason you have to be verbal about it.
Well, and yeah, and of course that's what the law requires, is that you provide notice, and that's great, because it could have been different.
Of course.
Yeah, and but as long as you do, you know what you're supposed to do, and you do that, as soon as you start that play button on I have a license to carry concealed handgun, it's pretty much over. We're done for the day, unfortunately. We're out of time, so join us next week on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio WHIO.